following material was performed under extreme mental duress and lack of prescribed medication.
You know, there's a lot more to comedy than what you hear on the stage.
I like the idea of comedy at night. Rule number one, attack the audience verbally.
You know, my friends laughed when I started doing comedy, and nobody's laughing now.
I emptied my case. They didn't boo me or anything. It's just every time I came out from behind the case, another 10 people had left. Man, I was ready to hang myself. I'm not kidding, man. I measured the light cord in the room and everything.
It's The Green Room, a program by comics with comics where we talk about everything. And it's starting right now. Hey, everybody, you've made it once again. It's The Green Room. I'm Vilmos, your host. Thank you very much for listening, especially those of you that do it on iTunes. We really appreciate that. If you don't know about iTunes or want more information about getting the show, go to the website. It's www.greenroomradio.net. All the information is there, many different ways to do it. This week, first time on the show. I missed him last time he came through. I just couldn't work out the logistics of getting him on. But here he is, folks. He's going to be a Catch a Rising Star May 31st to June 5th. It's Joe Maffa.
All right, man. Sounds good.
See there?
Yeah, I'm here. How's it going?
It's good. I've been up 3 hours waiting for your call. I worked until 2 o'clock this morning, and got up at 6:30 because I thought you were on New York time. What kind of Maffa are you, for Christ's sake?
My phone rang at 6 a.m. and I'm like, what is this guy, kidding me?
Dude, I felt bad about it, but I sent you. You know, everything that we do these days is done through email, right?
And
I had sent you an email back. You said, let's do it at 9 o'clock this morning. I said, that's great. What time zone are you in?
So, I didn't get that email.
Yeah, so you forced me to guess, and apparently.
That's okay. No, I don't care. You want to know something? I'm not drinking, so I went out last night with a couple of buddies that I know that moved out here, and we went to. I'm in Vegas, and I was at P.F. Chang's hanging out till like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
All places in Vegas. Where do you go in Vegas? The strip club? Oh, I'm going to the bar. I'm in P.F. Chang's. Exactly. I'm sipping a little Pinot Grigio. I asked the guy if he thought I was gay when he gave me the wine, because my other friends are drinking scotch. And I don't want, you know, just because I don't want to get all bent out of shape when I'm drinking. If I have a couple of drinks now, I'm out for a couple of days. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I get it. As long as you're not holding your pinky up as you're drinking the wine, I guess it's okay.
No, I only did that once or twice.
Dude, I felt bad when I was making the call. First thing I'm thinking, please don't let him be on Pacific time. Please don't let him be on Pacific time. So I apologize for that. I hope it didn't create any problem for you.
When I get calls that early in the morning, I'm thinking, you know, okay, or late at night, sometimes the phone rings, and you know, I'm starting to think, okay, something happened, you know?
I'm thinking
maybe one of my kids or somebody's calling me for a reason.
Yeah. Now, this time it's just as...
I saw the area code, and I was like, oh, it's the guy from the radio station.
Yeah, it's just this dumbass that I'm supposed to talk to this morning. You're an ex-radio guy, right? You did some radio for a while?
I did some radio upstate New York. I really didn't like, you know, it was more or less, what happened on that deal was, they were interviewing guys to do radio. They were bringing guys up because the longstanding sidekick on the show was leaving.
Yeah.
So they were bringing comics in and auditioning them. And what happened was I was doing the club that weekend, and somebody said, you feel like doing radio? And I never did radio before. And I just went on the station, started talking. They told me chime into the guys, you know, and it started shooting from the hip. And they loved me. The guy said to me, listen, whenever you want to come back, you have an open door policy here. So basically what I do is I call in a lot and I still go on the station. They audition me from time to time for spots. But it's not what I really want to do, because as a comic, you want to perform.
Sure.
And I go on the station, I call in, I promote my dates, but I'm not really working for them. But I could go on every day if I want to.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
But
they got a pretty decent following up there, too. It's in Albany. It's Clear Channel Station out of Albany.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, the guy is Bob Wolf, Waking Up with the Wolf. I don't want to promote somebody else's.
No, it doesn't matter. But, this is online, so I'm not really competing against him, I don't think.
Well, online is the way to go. He was even telling me that last time I was up there. He said, Celestial Radio is like dead.
Yeah, that's, you know what's funny? You brought that up because I was going to ask you about that because I didn't know how extensive your background in radio was. You're kind of a, no offense, Joe, but you're kind of a mystery online. A lot of guys I can find out a lot of shit about, you know?
Okay.
I was asking, folks may not know this, but I always ask a guy before we start if there's something I can especially hit for him that they got a little bit of passion for. And he had mentioned, you had mentioned, Shut Up, Sit Down and Eat, which is something that we'll talk about a little bit later. And I said I already had that on my list. You know, that here's how hard I was struggling with you. I actually picked that up from a picture on your Facebook page.
Yes. Okay. You know, there's a lot of guys, especially as comics, they list a lot of stuff that they've done. Especially if you see comic resumes, you'll look at a comic's resume and they'll list like every single comedy club they've done, every single, you know, bar and grill or gig that's really not. Well, basically, the only stuff I put on my resume and my stuff like that, it's online, is stuff that I think that really, like I did Law and Order. I was in a couple of movies with Sidney Lumet, stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
Casting director Sidney Lumet put me out there for a few things. Recently did a movie, you know, stuff like that. I'll put stuff like that up. But as a comic, you're just working. You just, you know, it's just a, you're a monologist. You go up there, you talk to people. My gig, I feel, that if the people like me, I don't give a shit what anybody else says. I don't know if that makes any sense, because a lot of guys go, well, he's funny, or I don't like what he does. And they put stuff online. It's just all, it's all hyped up bullshit. You know, your resumes and stuff. And as a comic, like I'm out here in Vegas. I don't want to knock anybody, but I'm walking around. I'm seeing on the billboard the Legends of Comedy series, and they have some guy's name up there. I'm doing comedy. I'm in the business over 20 years. I never even heard of that guy. This guy,
really?
Never even heard of him. I'm like, how can he be a legend?
Yeah, you well, know? There's a lot of new rooms opening up in Vegas, and guys are kind of rolling their own, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it. You got Don Barnhart just put something in. I don't know if you know Don.
I know of him. I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
I know of him.
Well, he's been around. He's been around for, you know, maybe just a little bit less time than you. He started out in L.A. and now he lives in Vegas. And then another guy named Joe. Boy, now my mind is gone. He's over at another place that I know. A couple comics just opened their own rooms in casinos.
They're putting their own rooms. Well, the casinos have become landlords. I'm trying to get a show. Actually, I don't think we're ready for it yet. The show, Shut Up, Sit Down and Eat.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's ready for a casino venue yet. I think it is. What we're not ready for it as far as going in. I want to get all my ducks in a row. I really want to line it all up, and I want to do this right because I don't want. I'll be honest with you. I'm not throwing something against the wall. This is. We got something that's really good here, and I'm going to put all my efforts, time, and energy into this because I know that this could be on Broadway. That's how good it is. And we've only previewed it a couple of times. We've worked on this thing for over 2 years. It's not something that's thrown together. We put it together with a bunch of comics, and it's a play. It's a stand-up comedy play. We call it a plomedy.
A plomedy?
Yes, a plomedy.
Cool.
That's like a gimmick name. It's actually. I mean, I don't know if you want to get into this right now, but
sure,
I'll give you the rundown on it. It's four Italian Americans meet in a therapist's office, and the therapist never shows up, and we pretty much talk about what's bothering us amongst ourselves. It's a group therapy session, but the therapist never shows up. And we discuss about what's going on amongst ourselves, and it's got a lot of twists and turns, and it's highly energetic, and it's entertaining. We get applause breaks. And we didn't. I'll tell you the truth, Files. We didn't even know what we had until we did it. After we previewed it, we looked at each other and went, "Did that just happen?" And then and then we previewed it again, and it was just as good. And now we're already booking up dates in theaters and some resorts with it, and we're looking to take this thing full steam ahead, you know? I'd love to talk to the guy in Reno, the hotel entertainment director, about it. Maybe they would put us up, maybe when they got their festivals in town, maybe when they're doing an Italian thing, would be perfect. But you do not have to be Italian to relate to everything that we talk about.
Oh, cool.
You know?
So who came up with the idea? Was it yours, or...?
Well, what happened is I went out with a buddy of mine. He was doing a show, and he had a stand-up comedy show with an Italian theme attached to it. And we went out to Minnesota. We did the Midwestern Conference of Theater Owners. In other words, it's a conference, a 3-day weekend they do in Minnesota in the Midwest for all the theater owners to come out and look at new entertainment, different types of entertainment to bring into their theaters. A lot of it was country western music. A lot of it was music, song and dance. It was a lot of some shows were put up that were pretty much like musical type shows. They had like Frank Sinatra impersonators and stuff, or Bruce Springsteen impersonators. These people, but they were top. They were tops. These guys. They had the stuff down. The promotions were phenomenal. Something that was basically a theater entertainment piece. It wasn't really like you do comedy clubs and stuff. We were comics.
Yeah.
We went in with the only comedians there. We went in, and common sense. I love my friend. He spent a lot of money. Put together a dynamite promotional package, but the deal is, who's going to buy 3 comics for a theater just because it has an Italian name to it?
Right.
Or 3 Polish comics, or 3 German comics, or Mommy's Night Out is another one. These girls, I love. Oh, she's a good friend of mine. She's getting dates actually, because that's a very good show she's doing. But it's not really theater when you really look at it. It's kind of like a stand-up comedy show with 3 people. And why would somebody buy that or pay top dollar for that? As a buyer, or how would you really sell that?
Right.
You can go to any comedy club and see 3 people do comedy on a Friday or Saturday night.
Yeah, that's
so. When I came home, I told my manager, I said I would love to go back there next year with something that I have, and we sat down and we talked, and he said he would love to get involved in directing something, and he came up with an idea for me, and we put the idea together, and I got a bunch of comics together. I originally wrote something, and then I got the comics together that. Who were friends of mine. You would never think we would mix together. And we sat down and we wrote our own thing. Everything I had, we scrapped. So it's all the creative juices on this thing. It's a 5-way split. We split this 5 ways. We have 5 partners on it.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out to be very good. Everything we wrote over 2 years, we put that on paper. We wrote it into a play, and we fit our comedy in, our stand-up comedy.
Uh-huh.
Our stand-up comedy is done in the play as a subconscious text to our conversations that we're having.
Okay.
Like my buddy will be talking about, why are you here? I tell him I'm here because of my kids. My comedy act has to deal with, I talk about being divorced, I got kids, it's hard raising kids, your kids don't appreciate you, I'm divorced twice, my ex-wife, when I got married. I mean, that's what my basics of my comedy act is. So now I'm in a therapist's office, and I'm talking about these things.
Uh-huh.
And then I go into my subconscious thought, but my subconscious thought is done to the audience, like a stand-up comic.
Right.
The other characters freeze in place, and they hold the conversation where it was. Like, we're talking about marriage, all of a sudden I'll just get up and I'll go to the audience. The stage darkens, and now it's just me up in the forefront, and I'll say, I've been divorced twice. Now I'm doing my stand-up comedy to the audience.
Oh, okay.
I do some jokes, then I sit back down, and we pick up the conversation where it was.
Oh.
And all of the other comics do the same exact thing. All the other, I'm going to call them actors, because in the show we're actors. Eric's got an extensive off-Broadway resume. Tina has been a writer and actor. My friend Chris Monty, I'm the only one who never did any plays. I mean, I've done some film and stuff like that, and they're telling me I was going to be the engine that drives this thing, and that's furthest from the truth. We all share in that title. I mean, it's really that good.
Well, that's fantastic.
I'm so excited about this. You have no idea. And you know what? And I'm not ashamed to say this. We have a winner, big time. And I'll put it out there, and I'll put it up for anybody who thinks differently. I've been going to a lot of off-Broadway shows, and I've been really banging the theaters in New York City for the last 2 years, trying to look at pieces and stuff, and we got a laugh-a-minute show here. It's real good.
Now,
it takes you somewhere. It takes you down a road. And just because we say, shut up, sit down, and eat the only cure for Italian insanity, you'll relate to what we're saying. I don't know if you've ever lost anybody close to you in your family. Eric does a piece about his mother passing away.
Uh-huh.
We do a piece about how we were raised when we were kids, how our parents used to reprimand us. It's common generic stuff, but it's we just put an Italian spin on it because everybody likes to eat Italian food. We figure maybe we'll get in some dinner theaters.
Well, and you also, don't you get a little bit of leeway when you do something like that where you can go for a little more irony because you're not expected to get the big laugh all the time?
No, I'll tell you the truth. As far as theater or plays, you don't. You see, when we were writing this thing, we all know what we have as far as our stand-up comics because I'm going to say headline acts. That's another phrase that really pisses me off in this business because I saw more feature acts skyrocket and become megastars than any headlines I've ever worked with. We're all comics, and we're all working comics, and we're solid. We have solid acts, and we get laughter from the audience, and people. We're working in all the East Coast venues, and so we come out west, and we're doing a lot of different venues. And when we were writing this thing, we knew we had a stand-up comics.
Yeah.
But when we started to write it in the beginning, we were like beside ourselves. This thing we're saying is phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
But we were writing it for so goddamn long, excuse my expression, that you forget what you're feeling when you first start. When we first started, no lie, I'm walking out of the house, and I'm saying, because we were doing this in my manager's house, we met like once or twice a week for the last, August will be 2 years since we started writing this thing.
Uh-huh.
And when we would leave, I would say to the other guys, do you guys have the same feeling I have that we have something special here? We actually said, imagine what the Beatles must have felt like when they threw down those first tracks and they knew what they had was special. That's what we were talking like that. Not that we're the Beatles. I don't want to compare myself to anybody like that. But I'm just saying when people or entertainers in the business actually realize, hey, I got something here. You know, what does that feel like? Like when you start landing something and all of a sudden you start doing stuff and you actually know it's funny.
Yeah.
Like, because as a comic, you got to try your material out. But when you write it down, you go, that's funny. Oh, that's funny. And you know it's funny. You can't wait to get on stage with it. And we lost that feeling because we've been doing it for 2 years.
Sure.
And then our director said, look, you're delivering a laugh here. You're going to get a laugh on the joke, but you might get a laugh on the setup. As a comic, you get laughs. You might not get laughs on some of your jokes. Some of your jokes, you might throw them out there, and you're going to get no laugh at all.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean in a theater piece that it's not funny. It means that people are listening to you. So it's totally different than doing stand-up comedy. Because stand-up comedy is stand-up comedy, and a theater piece or an acting piece is an acting piece. The first time we put the show up, I couldn't contain myself. I was laughing at all the jokes. I'm supposed to be in the dark, not moving, not hearing what they're saying. I couldn't stop laughing. And then I'm wearing a wireless mic, and I said, oh, Jesus, we got a hit. They got to pick that up right away. When the stage went dark at the end, we got music in the show. I'm really hoping to get this thing out there. And if nothing else, and if it doesn't go anywhere, and we just get a couple of dates here and there, I'm telling you right now, I'm just going to be so happy doing this thing because I know it's special. I really feel that way.
So how many times have you done it so far?
We've previewed the show twice. We got four bookings already with it.
Wow!
But here's what unseen bookings because the people they're getting the feedback on us. But here's the deal: if it was a regular play piece and it's scripted, it's not like three guys doing stand up comedy. We have a 90-page script, and it's not a piece that's like a play. You write a play and you say, okay, you did the play three times. Let's see, it's a play. What it is our stand-up comedy we do every week. I'm doing the show seven times this week and seven times next week because a good chunk of that show is my stand-up comedy.
Uh-huh.
So it's not like we never do, like we're not doing it. It's a stand-up comedy show. It's a play that's written around our stand-up comedy. And we did this a few times, too. We read the play. We worked the play and took out all of our stand-up comedy. All of our routines that are in the play, we took them out,
uh-huh.
And we just read the play. And it reads as a play.
Okay.
It reads, you will not lose out your interest watching this without the comedy in it. If we took the comedy out, you would not. There's no way you could lose the interest because it reads as a play. It's like the setups are there, and you can see we go. Like we'll be talking about raising children, and I'll do some bits on my kids, and Eric will talk about his kids, and then I'll say to Tina, do you have kids? And she'll say, no, it's none of your business. And then Monty goes, I'd like to have kids. But, you know, after listening to these guys, and Tina goes, you want kids, you just don't want their kids. And then she'll go to the audience, and she'll start talking about how she doesn't have children. She'll do like a couple of minutes on not having children. When she sits back down, I'll say to her, maybe you don't have kids because you don't like sex. You know what they say, sex is the highest form of communication. I say, you should open up a little bit and talk a little bit because sex is the highest form of communication. And then Eric will say, well, yeah, I agree, but I'm just getting tired of talking with myself, you know, talking to myself. And then he'll get up and he'll start talking about his sex life. Uh-huh. And then we all start talking about our sex lives. It kind of all blends, but if you take the comedy out, the actual stand-up comedy joke, it reads as a play, 100%. But we all do our comedy every weekend, so it's like it's kind of like we've been doing this thing for like 5 years.
Oh, sure.
Almost. That's how we feel.
Sure. Now, is there equal focus on all the characters in the play?
I guess there is. You know what? We all really go up to the audience. The show runs an hour and a half. At one point, they're talking. Like in the beginning, I may be doing a little bit more stand up than them, and they'll do it in the end. But at the end, I think it all just blends, and we all compliment ourselves as actors.
Uh-huh.
Definitely. My friend's wife had said this week when we put it up last week, she said that she felt that we all equally did okay. We all did equal. Because I was asking about that.
Uh-huh.
You know, how did it seem equally, like we all did the same amount of stage time, and do we deliver it the same way? And she said, yes, it all came out perfect that way.
Does it...
I'm sorry.
No, I apologize. Go ahead.
No, the only negative feedback we got is that we put it up in a place that wasn't a theater venue.
Uh-huh.
Because a friend of ours, he owns a club that seats like 400 people, so we put it up there. And the only problem that people had was the venue was like serving like food and drinks as they were walking around. Sometimes people like missed a scene or a part that we had said, but you know, like the waiter would be in their way. So it's basically, it's definitely theater. It has to be theater. It's not stand-up comedy.
So,
it's definitely theater.
So are you guys going to have a big set, or is it something that's, you know, in my mind, sometimes I think of these guys that do kind of the one-man shows that have the minimalist stuff, like they might have a chair and a table and a, you know what I mean?
Yeah, our set consists of two 8-foot, they're 8-foot walls I built.
Uh-huh.
I built them out of like a curtain, actually. I mean, it's so simple to build, you know, it's just a square and I put a curtain. We hang some pictures. Then we have four chairs, two tables, a couple of plants to make it look like a doctor's office, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, we hang the fake doctor certificates on the wall and stuff like that. I'd like to really make a nice set. A very good friend of mine, a very, very highly successful friend of mine, his show is my mother's Italian, my father's Jewish, and I'm in therapy. my friend Steve Solomon, what a phenomenal show he's got. He took this thing all the way from regional theater and dinner clubs to casinos to Broadway, a main show on Broadway, off Broadway, and he's still touring now with the show, to where he's putting it up in different venues in foreign countries. I believe it's debuted in London. He's had people playing him, and he's just phenomenal. We talk a lot, and he's got like a. He told me when he was out in L.A., he was out there for like 8 weeks, and he had it was a $20,000 set. He had, you know, and he had to bring it around and get a truck and a road manager. We don't have anything like that.
Uh-huh.
We're just starting out. You know what? From my mouth to God's ears, I hope someday we do.
Oh, well, you know, your show's measured by the number of semis that come in. I know somebody that's in the stage, I used to know somebody who's in the stagehands union. And
okay. They
would tell me about how these shows would come in and how many semis is kind of how they judge the show.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
It's kind of a cool theater thing. But
if we got to run in Reno, say they said, listen, we want to put the show up for 2 weeks in Reno. We're going to give you a theater in Reno, and we cut a deal and we're coming to Reno. I would come in a couple of days early. I'd build my own set. I can build the whole thing. I'm very, very handy that way. I go over to Home Depot, buy all the lumber and everything I need right there. Boom, boom, boom. Need a couple of pictures to hang up. I'd have that thing done in 2 days easily. You know,
uh-huh.
1, 2, 3. It stays. And when we're done, hopefully you make enough money in something like that. The way you're done, you just toss everything. I'm not talking about a $20,000 or $30,000 set. Don't get me wrong, but
sure.
Something that just looks like a backdrop in a doctor's office.
Yeah.
You know, But I would like to really start this thing. I mean, that's another thing that's like a, that's a wish come true, to get a theater in Reno, like in a hotel. I would just like to go. I would like to start small, and I want to do dinner theaters.
Uh-huh.
It's an easy. It's a God Almighty. It's an easy sell. It's so easy, and especially the name. Shut up, sit down, and eat. My God, you know. You come out, people stuff their face, you do a show, you go home, you make some decent money, and everybody's happy, and then you build on that. You build to the next, like my friend Steve, I talk with him all the time, and he asked me, what do I want from it? And I told him, basically, like what you did, I want to start small, and I want to grow it. I want to nurture it, you know, and take it to the next, take things to the next level.
Sure.
As a comic, as a stand-up comic, there are a lot of the stars going to line up for you to really like skyrocket. I've worked with guys who are extremely funny that like my mouth will hang when I watch these guys on stage, and they really never achieve anything much more than being a club act or a guy who's working, because they don't have a lot of, there's not a lot of management that will get behind them, or people might. People judge a comic. They'll say, this guy's dirty. He's funny, but he's dirty.
Yeah.
They'll say, this guy's a hack act, you know, which is, he might be a hack act to you, but I judge by the audience.
Yeah.
And yeah. Entertainment people don't a lot of times. They're looking for what's going to make a lot of money. The young guy, this guy, and at my age, it's very hard. At people's ages, once you're over 35 and over 40, it's very hard for industry people to really connect to somebody, because the age has a lot to do with it.
Sure.
Somebody might like me for my character, and they might put me in films or on TV because they like my character and who I am. I'm a little rough around the edges. I'm a New York type. I got the New York accent or whatever people will say.
Uh-huh.
But they're not going to really get behind me and like throw up. You know, I get character stuff. But, so the next way to go is to produce your own stuff and to bring something special to the masses or to the audience that you cannot be denied.
Sure.
You can't be denied.
Sure.
You can't. And I got people that will back us. We have people that will definitely produce us with good money, you know. I'll have to spend inheritance money, but
well,
I think we'll make it back. I think we can make it back.
Well,
I'm really excited. You can tell about the show.
Oh.
I hope I don't sound like some sort of an asshole. I'm supposed to be doing an interview about being a stand-up comic.
No. You know what? The show's
I'm like beside myself with this thing. I feel we got something real special. Really special. Really.
No.
That's how I feel.
Joe, first of all, don't sell yourself short. You're a tremendous asshole. Now.
Thank you.
No, but the show is about...
I'm married twice, man. I've heard a lot worse than that.
No.
You need to take my shit away to make me fucking hurt.
No, the show is about comics and what we do. Not necessarily about comedy.
You're right.
So, in any case, what brings one of the questions came to my mind about the show. I mean, you are excited. It's you're going from being a lone wolf, which we as comics are used to, making our own decisions and deciding what we're going to do immediately. In some cases, to now being a member of a group. You know, in essence, dude, you've just joined the band, right? And everybody knows the band lifestyle. You got people that are in it for different reasons. In a band, it's, you know, one guy wants to get laid, one guy's out to party, one guy's in it for the music, the other one...
One guy thinks he owns it all, it's his, you know, it's
right.
His stuff. And,
right,
yeah.
So how are you fitting in? I know these are all your friends and everything. Are you feeling good about the dynamic
of... I'll tell you, here's the deal. The only one argument we had in the last almost 2 years was between me and my manager, who is the director of the show, because I didn't remember my lines and he was riding me. He said to me, you're forgetting your lines. And I drive, the guys all live on Long Island. I've been driving, I live about 60 miles away from where it is, from where we're doing this.
Uh-huh.
And it's the 60 mile from hell ride. I got to come on Route 80 in New Jersey, over the George Washington Bridge, through the Bronx, over the over the Frognerneck Bridge, through Queens into Long Island, and we meet every Tuesday,
uh-huh.
Tuesday, Wednesdays, Mondays, and what I do is I leave my house for 7 o'clock meeting, around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, Jesus.
And I go meet my son at 5:30. I have dinner with my son because he works out there. And we grab a quick bite to eat. I leave him at 6:30, 6:45. Get over to Tom's house, stay there till about 9:10 o'clock, and I drive home. There have been nights where I sit in traffic for 2-3 hours. Some nights, one time I got a flat tire. What a pain in the ass. And there are tolls involved. And it cost me money to drive, especially at almost $5 a gallon for gasoline. And the only argument we had was I said to Tom, I didn't drive 4 hours to come here and have you bust my fucking balls. Because I forgot. But meanwhile, I was more embarrassed because I did forget my lines. I did. I'm not going to lie. And he paid no mind to me. And Eric, Monty, Chris Monty, Tina George, we're family now. That's it. We're family. We are. And Tom, these are my brothers and sisters. I'm locked in with these guys. Everything we discuss, nobody has more of a say. Anybody else?
Yeah.
We're not in it for the money. See, one of the deals is, put this together with these guys. I got friends of mine who are phenomenal guys, and they could have fit into this so simply. But here's the deal. I know the commitment wouldn't have been there. Any week you do what we're doing, but it's about a commitment thing, too.
Sure.
You got to be committed to doing it. And then a lot of guys that I talked to about doing stuff in the past, they were like, well, you know what? That's great. We can make $1,000 a show. Oh, we can't do this for less than $500, you know. But nobody ever talked about money with this thing at all.
Right.
We know what we got, and we know the money will come. And these guys are all, you know, they're all good guys. And I don't. And maybe I'm sounding like an asshole here, but I don't think that we're going to have arguments about shit. I'm sure we will if something comes up, you know. But I don't think that it's going to. I don't think that's going to affect us. Plus, we're not kids.
Sure.
Nobody's in it to get laid. I can tell you that right now. I was at P.F. Chang's last night, okay? And I'm in Vegas. You know what I'm saying? Don't get me wrong. I love sex. I have a wife. So is Eric. Tina's married. Chris Monty's single. We're already teasing Chris. We're all like saying to Chris, you know, you're gonna get laid a lot, you know, once this thing takes off.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're all clowning around with busting Monty's balls and stuff. But we're all, and plus we're all working comics, so we kind of know the show business game already.
Sure.
And we've all been in the business for years. So we know the game. We know the game. We definitely know the game. It's not like we're just like a lot of the shit that is all going to be passe. It's like when the new guys come in, they're just starting out, they're getting all hyped up, and everyone's liking them, and there's no egos here. I work with Chris and Eric. They tell me I'm closing the show. I tell them I don't want to close the show. They go, why? I go, I don't want to follow you guys. Chris put me on a show last weekend. He goes, you're closing it. I said, Chris, you're fucking burying me on the show, man. He goes, don't worry about it. Everyone's doing 20 minutes, you're doing 35. There were 6 comics on the show, all from Long Island. All of these guys headline. Tina was on the show. Chris was on the show. I was in the back going, I'm fucking dead. I'm going to bomb. I went up there, tore the place, a new asshole, got off the stage. He said, see, I told you. But you see, there's no egos.
Yeah.
There's no egos. I don't want to work with those guys because I know they're funny. I know in a situation they're funnier than me. I know in a situation I'm funnier than them. They know. Like, I got a good friend. He says to me, I don't want to work with you no more. Don't take it the wrong way. I'm not going to put you on the show. He goes, I don't want to work with you. He goes, because you're too funny. Somebody else might go, I'm going to go on stage. I'm going to bury this guy. And then you work with other guys. And you can tell there are some guys out there. They try to upstage you. When you like, and those guys make me laugh because it's like, you know, we're all in business together. I know where I fit, and I'm not, you know, and I never judge. You'll never hear me come off that stage and go, this audience sucked.
Yeah.
Unless they're really like, it's always you. It's always the comic. It's always the actor. It's the guy who puts the play up. I had a bad performance. I'll say that. I didn't do as good as I've done auditions and people are going, you killed. And I go, I could have done a lot better.
Sure.
And I go, what are you talking about? I go, I'm telling you, I could have done a lot better. Because as an actor, and then you get the guy who goes up on stage and he bombs and comes over and goes, I crushed the room.
So
in what venue did you crush? last time I was out in Reno, I went with Christian took me over to a bar that does comedy on the weeknights. They do open mic nights.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with the place over there.
No, I've worked there. I haven't been to that place. I've just worked the club. So.
I forget the name of the place he took me to. When we went in, it was all young kids, a lot of young kids. And, you know, and I went up on stage, and I am so not. They were, like, looking at me like, where did this guy come from?
Uh-huh.
I got up on stage. I did my stuff. I didn't do as well as a lot of the people that were in that venue hanging out because it was like an open mic night at a bar. Some, a lot of college kids, people just starting out. You know, I did my stuff.
Yeah.
So if you took those kids and you put them in a casino venue where I'm working, they would die also.
Sure, sure, sure. Well, the venue's important sometimes.
Well, what happens is when you're doing the business for a long time. Like I got a buddy back east. We're working with this one kid, and the kid is rocking and rolling on stage. He's a talented guy. His name is Nori Davis.
Uh-huh.
He's got a lot of shit happening for him. He's with the same management people as me now. He's on stage, and we're doing a resort, and he's hosting the resort. But everybody at the resort, the guy puts us all up. So we all do 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And there's like four or five acts. And my friend is closing the show, and he's going to me, I don't get it. They're laughing at him. I said to my friend, I go, you realize, I said, how old is your son? He said to me, my son's 23. I go, you realize he's 2 years older than your son, this guy on stage? You realize that? I said, you realize it's like how long we've been in this game? that these are the new guys coming up. He's 23. He's 25. He's smoking his place, man. I said, of course you don't get it because you can't relate to what he's saying. But the younger kids can. And you know what? This guy. Imagine what he's going to be like in 20 years from now. He's
sure.
going to blow up. He's going to be a monster and funny. You know, you can't deny funny. You can't deny it.
No,
I'm more of a character, like you know, than I am on stage. I'm more of a character on stage. And people laugh at it. And this is somebody told me a long time ago. And it's really it's crazy how you don't figure things out until you're doing it for a while. He told me your material will never be as funny as you. I said, what the fuck does that mean? You know, because I'm telling you, you will never be able to write material that will be as funny as your character.
Uh-huh.
And I said, what the fuck does that mean? You're a cruise ship act. What are you talking about? But I understand what he's saying, because a lot of times I'll just be talking to people and I'll say something, and they laugh. And I go, what are you laughing at? And they go, "You just the way you said that, it cracks me up."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, presentation is everything, right?
Well, that's what you laugh at the character, the way people say things, you know?
Sure.
You know, some of the stuff I say is so just outright, it's just wrong, you know. Like, a lot of people come up to me after the show and go, you really don't feel that way, do you? And I go, I do and I don't, but I don't walk around and wear that as a badge of honor.
Sure.
I talk about my kids, how they make me sick to my stomach sometimes, and they do. What parent in this world has not looked at their kids at one time or another and just went, you little fuckers are not turning out the way I planned. You fucking make me sick to my stomach. How many parents... I'm sorry. Maybe that's wrong. Especially if you live in California. You got to talk to your child. Bullshit. That's what I think. There's no talking. I'll talk to you when you're in your 20s. When you're living in my house, you do what I say. That's how I feel. You know. But it's wrong to say that way. But a lot of parents feel... A lot of people out there feel that way. Are you kidding me? A lot of parents feel that way. A lot of parents feel their lives are ruined because of their children. They love their kids, but they feel like, I'm giving everything to my kids. I have nothing. That's why they sit home and eat like 19 fucking bags of Doritos, and they end up dying before they're 60 because they got a fucking cholesterol level that's like higher than the stock market. I mean, come on. It's like, but I do a lot of stuff about my children. I love my kids to death. I kill myself for my kids like any parent would.
Sure.
But it's wrong the way what I'm saying. I know it's wrong, but it's also a joke. It's not. It's sarcasm, but it's taken to another level for the laugh.
Sure.
And it's the way I say it as a character on stage. You know, like the other night I was talking about divorces. I'm on stage. I'm talking to this woman. I said I'm divorced twice. I said I'm divorced twice. I'm remarried again, but I don't talk about my third marriage. Sometimes I mention I'm married for the third time, but we don't talk about that. Because when you're married three times, when you're married twice, okay. When you're married three times, people start to become suspect. They're like, okay, you know, we don't want to hear about this guy's marriages. He's married three times, he's a fucking loser, basically. You know, you're in your third marriage. So I'm on stage, I'm talking about my first marriage that only lasted 8 months, which is true.
Uh-huh.
It's all true. It lasted 8 months. My wife had a nervous breakdown. She ended up in a hospital getting shock treatments. I got fucking divorced. Boom, right away. I got divorced. We got divorced, and like I said, you know, my family told me, you know, they sat me down. They said, you can't stay married to this girl. Basically, you won't be able to have children with her because she's got a mental problem, and your kids will have mental problems. This is what my family told me, and I divorced the girl. There you go. A real, you know, we love her, but, you know. That's a God's honest truth. I don't even talk about that on stage. I should. That's a God's honest truth. And then what happens is I'm feeling the audience out. Okay, I'm divorced twice. Okay, you know, how many other people divorced here? So some guy says, you have three marriages. Another guy yells out, four. I said, holy shit, you people are worse than I am. So I said to the woman on the side, she goes, I'm divorced five times. She threw me.
Jesus.
I, like, actually was shocked. I went, you fucking kidding? Like, as soon as she said I'm divorced five times, I was like, whoa, what, are you fucking kidding me? I started laughing at her. I said, five times. I was like, holy shit. What, did you need a green card or something? She said, no, they did. And the audience went nuts. I just kept fooling around with her and stuff. But it's all relatable stuff. It's, uh-huh. I mean, everything you do is, as a comic, you relate it, but you take it to the next level. Now, I was calling her a loser, kind of like clowning around. Uh-huh. But I'm calling myself a loser. I don't mean that about her being a loser. I don't know. She's divorced five times. Who the hell knows?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you go to Utah, these guys are married. They got three or four wives.
Sure.
They got sister wives. They call them sister wives. What the fuck is that?
That's a woman that's willing to accept a lot. That's what a sister wife is.
Who in their right mind, would want to be living in under a roof with three or four women who claim to be your wife?
Yeah.
Who can claim to be your wife at any, you know, certain given point of time to say, he's my husband. Could you imagine how much your balls would get broken every day if you had three or four wives living with you in the same house?
Oh, dude.
I can't. What is one cook? One cooks, one you bang, the other one cleans. And what is the other one, a spare tire? Just in case
no,
one gets tired?
Yeah, the other one's the fluffer.
Oh, my God. And don't they usually have a young one, an old one, a middle-aged one?
You know what? I'm not that old a guy. I'm like in my early 50s. I just can't even imagine having the energy for all that. And I'm not talking about physical. I'm talking about emotional energy. I could never get that.
Oh, okay. I couldn't imagine it either. I met these people once. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Chicagoland area, we'll call it. Illinois.
Chicago. Okay. It's just like a big city area. You got suburbs in the city and stuff. I met these people once out here. Nothing wrong with the people. I remember they were from Montana. I met these girls from Montana, and just going back a while, I was in Vegas, and we were out of the club, and they came over, and they started talking, we saw your show, and I'm hanging out with them. There were three sisters, and we're hanging out in the club, and I start talking to them. I said, so where are you girls from? And they said, we're from Montana, and I go, are you single? And they said, no, yes. They couldn't give me an answer, yes or no. And I said, well, you got a husband? And they said, yeah, we have a husband. I have kids. How many kids? They each like had four or five kids.
Uh-huh.
And then I go to... So I'm saying, what's your nationality? And they said, we're American. I said, okay, but where did your ancestors come from? Because that's the first thing you ask in New York when you see somebody.
Ah.
You know, where are you from? What's your nationality? You know the last thing. You're Irish? Is that Irish? Is that German? Because nobody's from New York. I mean, everybody's from New York, but, you know, you go, five generations back, the furthest, and your grandparents or your great-grandparents or their great-grandparents came from another country.
Uh-huh.
You know, two generations. Two generations removed, and everybody was on a boat. Somewhere. So you usually ask you what's your nationality. So they said we're Americans, and I said, well, what is your like? You know, where did your family come from? That we're Americans. They said, and they got adamant with me. I said, okay. I said, what's your religion? They said, they didn't say anything. They said, we really don't have a religion.
Uh-huh.
That's what you don't have a fucking religion. That's exactly what I said. I was thinking about when you don't have a religion. They said, we don't have a religion. I said, are you Jewish? They went, no. They got mad. They were mad because I asked them, you know, you guys, you're not Jewish, right? No, we're not Jews. I was like, okay, relax, man, you know, because I tell people, if you don't like Jews, you don't like me, because I grew up around Jewish people, and Italian people and Jews, they're really a lot alike.
Sure.
You know, especially, really a lot alike. So, and I say the same thing being in New York, if you don't like black people, you don't like me. That's what I fucking tell people, because we grew up in a melting pot, and everyone fits in. We're just too stupid to realize that we spend too much time arguing amongst ourselves As I'm not even going to get into that, it's just people. But everybody's the same. We all share the same likenesses. We all want the same shit. So these people tell me, these girls tell me, well, we don't have a religion. And I said, do you put up a Christmas tree? Do you celebrate the holidays? You know, what? You got to have something. Uh-huh. And they go to me, we're Freeman.
Freeman?
Freeman.
Sounds like and a last
said,
name.
Oh, no, no. Well, yeah, it sounds like a last name, but I said, oh, okay, I get it, because I watch TV and all that A&E bullshit. Freemen are the people that believe they are. I don't know what they believe in. I really don't, and I'm not judging anybody. I don't want anybody to show up to my show with a fucking 30-30 and shoot me in the fucking head while I'm on stage this weekend either, okay? So if you're listening out there, and if you start with me, you might kick my ass, but I'll bite one of your fucking ears off. That's how I feel. But Freeman are like, you know, they feel, you know, like they, it was like Timothy McVeigh and all of that bullshit.
Oh.
He was a Freeman. That's what their beliefs are. They have, you know, some people might call them radical beliefs. I don't know. I don't know enough about these people. I know that some of the things that people do in this world, I know I would never do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that whole shit with Bin Laden, what he did. You know, people say to me, how do you feel about it? They killed Bin Laden. Am I going to celebrate them killing that fucking guy? I don't celebrate them killing him. He did so much damage, that motherfucker. You know, how can anybody be happy that he's gone? He already did his damage.
Right.
You know, I only hope they didn't kill him. And that's my religion telling me I shouldn't believe that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a Christian. I'm Catholic.
Yeah.
I say Christian because Catholicism, it's all made of shit anyway. I'm a Christian. I believe in the teachings of what I was raised to believe. And, I hope they caught that guy. I hope they took him alive. I hope they're torturing him right now as we speak. But I'm not supposed to feel that way. That's a sin, the
sure.
way I was raised.
Sure,
you
sure.
Know? But as far as our politics and our government and all this other bullshit, that's just exactly what it is. It's all bullshit. They tell us one thing and they do something totally different. You know, and it's evident just every day when you put gas in your car and you're paying almost fucking $5 a gallon of gasoline. There's no reason for that shit. There's no reason for that. That's to control the economy. That's the only reason. That's what that's all about.
Well, and most of what you pay in gas, I don't know if most of it anymore, but a lot of it is taxes. You're paying
taxes.
A tremendous amount of money for taxes.
It's control. It's all control. It's the government control. Why do you think the government is afraid of the mafia? Or they're afraid of not just the Italian mafia, organized crime. Because to a certain degree, they are organized crime. They take a portion of your check every week.
Yep. That's right.
And at the end of the year, they give you your money back. What bullshit is that? If they ring your doorbell tomorrow and go, listen, you owe us X amount of dollars for taxes, and we're taking away your house and everything else, and boom, you're done. You're finished. You can't fight them. You can't go up against them.
Sure.
You can't.
You're right.
You can't. You know, so in this country, you know, we're turning into a society that's basically every man for himself. That's what it is.
Uh-huh.
That's the mentality. The shit they're telling you about the banking system and the shit they're telling you about how we're gonna turn this around and they're bailing out thieves and robbers and fucking people that stole from us. They just depleted the whole financial system in this country. And these are still people that are in office today and they hold high position jobs in the administration that pretty much is telling us we're going to fix everything. It's ridiculous.
Sure.
It's ridiculous. It's sickening. It's sad. But, like you said, you're in your mid-50s. I'm 50. I'm on the back nine, dude. I don't give a shit. I'm on the back nine. You know what? I'm going to use a term like my kids told me. We'll figure it out.
Sure. Well, that's exactly right.
We're going to go for dinner this weekend? No, yeah, we'll figure it out. What time should I pick you up? I don't know. We'll figure it out. Let's figure it out. Because they bullshit you to buy an electric car, okay?
Sure.
I mean, I'm being serious. I'm supposed to be a comic. They bullshit you, buy an electric car. Okay, you're going to buy an electric car? I'll be using gasoline until my bones rot. They're not going to be using electric. They're going to be using cars that run on electric, and then you'll start seeing people with electric cars. There's always, you know, we're going to go green. You're going to go green. Some schmuck is always going to throw his fucking garbage out his car window on fucking I-95. You know what I'm saying? You're only going to go green to a certain extent. You're only going to use electric cars to a certain extent. They're always going to use gasoline. They're always going to use home heating oil. They're always going to fuel jets with high-octane fuels and shit like that. Who are they kidding?
Sure.
It's a joke.
No, it's a joke. Things are in a state of affairs like we've never seen them before, and it doesn't seem like it's getting any better.
No, they're selling you a line of bullshit, a line of goods.
Right.
You know what they may need in this? You know what might straighten shit out? Believe it or not,
huh.
A world war.
Oh well, like
World War One and World War Two.
Yeah.
Well, that's most strange, and I'm not saying to start a war with anybody. Don't get me wrong, but history repeats itself. When economies start to get depleted, and everybody starts to freak out, and there's no money, and people are starving, what do? They fight. It's like going to a nightclub on a weekend. The guys who don't pick the girls up start a fight. The guys who aren't getting laid, they're either going to get laid or there's going to be a fist fight, one or the other. And that's what's happening in this world today.
Yeah.
You're going to have money, or we're going to fight. There's going to be. What's happening in the Middle East is people don't realize it. These people have no money.
Yeah.
These guys work. They'll work all week, all year, and they bring home what, $2,000?
Sure, it's like nothing. Yeah.
And all the gasoline and the governments are so corrupt, and they're in bed with our government. That's why they hate us, because they see, oh, their government's corrupt. They're backed by the U.S. government, who's corrupt. You know, and we're starving, so they hate us. They don't hate us. I haven't met an Arab guy that I really don't like. I'll be honest with you. I mean, some people, you meet them, you don't know. I don't know them, but I think that they want, especially if they come to live here, they want what we have.
Uh-huh.
They
oh, come sure.
In for the American, they're coming for the American way of life.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, the whole thing is a lot of us, we don't understand them. You know, and a lot of people are at the point, and I don't blame them, they don't want to understand them. Fuck them. That's what they say. I don't want to understand these people. I want to understand what's wrong in my life, and I want my life fixed. I don't give a shit anymore about the fucking people that come to this country anymore. And that's another thing we have to start looking at.
Immigration?
You know? Immigration. Definitely going to look at immigration, because our borders are still open like they were 200 years ago when we needed people to come to this country.
Yeah, well, you know, my dad's an immigrant from Hungary, and, you know, I'm first generation on this soil. So
okay.
He came over here, and he came over here at the end of World War II. His goal was to make a life here and then bring over his seven brothers and sisters, and nobody wanted to come. Nobody wanted to come after he got here.
Yeah, that happened kind of with my grandmother. My grandmother was born here. She was born here. She came here. She was born here. And she's the first of nine children, and her father couldn't get any work. He was here with his brother. So he went back to Italy. And he took my grandmother back with him and his wife. And when he got there, he had another eight kids.
Uh-huh.
And when my grandmother turned 19, he sent her to America, to his brother's house, who stayed.
Yeah.
And he was going to move here, but he never did. He ended up passing away. Uh-huh. And my grandmother stayed here, and our whole family, nobody came.
Huh. Yeah, that's kind of a weird situation to be in. I know it was for my dad. Plus, when he was over here, you know, everybody was behind the Iron Curtain at that time, up until, you know, it fell. So, I think he only went back to visit him three or four times before the curtain fell, and it was always that, well, see you, Dad. Hope we see you again.
Yeah, hope we see you again. You know, say hello to the family that we don't know.
Exactly. I don't know any of my family on his side. It's really kind of odd to have roots but not really know them.
You don't know them, exactly. It is hard. But today it seems that anybody could just come in and get a job. They get the freedoms. What bothers me, not so much that the people coming in, because I believe everyone come in, free country, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
I don't like the fact that people come here, or people that are not from this country, they hide behind our Constitution.
Uh-huh.
And they do things that are out and out, you know, un-American, or that it's totally... They're given the same rights as us as citizens when they're not a citizen, and if you went to their country, they'd cut your fucking head off in a second.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You can't hide behind any of their laws, and our country gives these people those God given rights, and you know, I don't understand that, especially when the fact that as an American, sometimes our rights are infringed upon, and our freedoms are infringed upon, and we're born and raised here.
Well, you know what? Here's my opinion of that. I think that's because I would say the great majority of the people in this country are from some sort of immigrated background, right? And
okay.
I think we kind of feel like, look, they were welcoming to us when we got here. we need to be welcoming to them. Although I will say this, when my dad came across, you know, it was important to acclimate yourself into society. It was important to him to learn the language. He would never be disrespectful and speak the language outside of a certain area, in the sense that, you know, like you go into a Home Depot and you hear, and I'm not picking on the Hispanic folks, so I'm sorry, but, you know, you hear the Hispanic guys asking for things in their native language. Because they haven't bothered to even learn to speak our language. My dad.
I can't tell you how many times people ask me if I speak Spanish. Just because I get a tan, I look, I get dark. Do you speak Spanish? No, I don't speak Spanish. I'm lucky I speak English. And people tell me I have an accent because I'm from New York.
Jeez. Well, let me tell you this. I think you'll find this interesting because we're on the immigration thing. I live in a town called Florence, Colorado, which was big in the early 1900s for mining. So there are when they populated this town, they sent the guy to New York, and he would stand at the docks, and he would have a stick that was whatever high, 56 inches or whatever it was, right? And anybody that passed underneath the stick was offered a job, because they put they kept the stick short because they didn't want to have the mine shafts to be tall, right?
Exactly.
So guess what? Florence was originally settled by a lot of Italian folk, right?
Okay.
So, all right, so fast forward whatever number of years it was, because I honestly can't remember. The Italian folks get together, they put together a union, and they go on strike. So the mine owners, being the assholes that they were, said, well, fuck you guys, we'll find somebody else. We need to find some more short guys, and the other Italians ain't going to walk across the line, so let's go south. So they went down to Mexico, and they brought Mexicans up, right? So now in my town, I live in a town with people who's got names like Jose Moschetti, and they, you know, and they make their spaghetti with jalapenos in it, or, you know, their cannoli.
That's funny, man.
Dude, it's fantastic the way that it's been integrated. And so we have both of these societies. We have a very strong kind of Hispanic background here, but we also have a very strong Italian background, and they blended over the years. And, you know, you said that, and it kind of made me think of it.
It should blend, because, like, California was all Mexico at one time.
Sure. Sure it was.
It was all Mexico. And then they said, we don't want any Mexicans to come across the border. How did you fucking say that? how could you say that? The natural flow of things. This is what the world was years ago. It was all Mexico. Now you're saying it was all Spanish. And it's like I watched the president last week. He's talking about the Middle East, and he said that Israel should give back the land to the Palestinians.
Yeah, I heard that.
You know, and, oh, they blew up over there. Forget about it.
Oh, they were pissed off at him.
Oh, they're very pissed off at him. And I'm saying to myself, in the back of my head, that would be like somebody saying to Obama, we'll give back the land to the Palestinians if you give back the land to the American Indians.
Right, or give back Texas to Mexico.
Exactly. Are you fucking kidding me? Mind your own fucking business. But the problem is, I watched a guy on Charlie Rose the other night. I'm watching TV in my room, and he's saying it's about the oil.
Uh-huh. Oh, of course
he
it
said,
is.
He says if Israel starts a fight in those Arab countries, they're worried over there. See, people don't realize this. If that flow of oil stops, you think $5 a gallon is going to be a lot of money at the pumps? You're looking at $8, $9, $10 a gallon at the pumps if they stop oil.
Sure.
And we're shitting in our pants over here. Because you know what? We will have to tap our reserves and all of that other shit. And you know what? And I don't know why they don't tap the reserves anyway. It is a different world. Use them up. I guess they want to keep it for militarily wise and stuff like that. But who knows? I don't know.
Well,
we're all interweaved into one big melting pot now. The whole world is one big melting pot.
Yeah. It is, and it's the borders are getting smaller. News goes faster. Everything happens in a different way than it used to. And you know what? I'm going to tell you this. I think I like the old way better, because I lived in the old way a little bit. You know what I mean?
I'm on the back nine. I don't give a shit. I swear to God, I don't fucking care anymore. I'm on the back nine. I'm not going to be alive in 50 years or 100 years from now. I might be 50. Yeah. If I'm lucky, yeah. I don't know if I want to be alive in 50 years from now, because I don't want to be around to see the fucking people that I know going.
It's all quality of life. My dad made it to 90. My dad made it to 91. His last year, he couldn't hardly see. He didn't hurt, but he couldn't see and he couldn't hear. What kind of fucking life is that? Right?
Exactly. He, 100% right. I want to hit the ground one day and never wake up and just go, you know what? I enjoyed myself.
It, well, you know, I don't.
I,
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I ever told the story. I certainly haven't told to you, but my dad, he was a doctor, right? His life was literally beholden to other people until he was 75 when he retired, right? So he retires at 75, and my mom would call me and go, he's out there digging a hole. Yeah, okay, good. Well, he's holding his heart every once in a while. I go, Ma, if the guy wants to go and dig a hole until he drops dead, fucking let him. Let him decide when he goes. Because watching him walk around the house, not being able to see or hear, I thought that was a lot more painful than watching a guy die of cancer.
You're right. I saw my mother when she my mother was gone yesterday. It was her anniversary, 11 years.
Oh.
Yesterday was 11 years. And people go to me, how do you feel? This is my mom's gone 11 years. She's gone like, it's always like it was yesterday when you lose somebody.
Uh-huh.
So the dates don't matter to me.
Yeah.
And I just said, yeah, well, she suffered in the end. And I used to go to church and go, why don't you just take her? What are you doing?
Right.
You know, she had a brain tumor when she should have passed away when she got it. She lived, but she went into a coma when she woke up. She was like severely handicapped and retarded. She didn't remember anybody.
Sure.
I mean, she didn't remember her grandchildren. All she wanted to do was sleep. She was severely depressed. I said, why is she even alive? Why is she even alive at this point?
Yeah.
You know? And you look at people and you just go, God Almighty, I hope that doesn't happen to me. And then my grandmother lived to be 99, didn't spend a day in the hospital until the end.
Sure.
99 years old, but she was that age because she was miserable, and she just was so miserable in life. And that, you know, and I'm not ashamed to say that either. You know, that was the way she lived her life.
Yeah, well,
I
would rather just die in my sleep or have a massive heart attack and go. I mean, you know, I don't want any prolonged shit.
The whole point I'm trying to make is that the way things are for us, it's not going to change. It's not going to change. The programs they're putting into play in through government and policies right now won't take effect for the next 10 years. You won't start to see the effects of them. And you know what? I'll be on my way to my 70s, in my 60s. It isn't going to matter.
Yeah.
It's not going to matter to me. It's not my kids it's going to matter to.
Sure, you're right.
And you know what? And everybody goes, well, I'm worried about the children's future. You know what? I'm worried about what's going on right now. Because the way things are, we don't have a future in this country.
No.
The way things keep going the way they're going.
Well.
So I look at it.
Well, but yeah, but the good news is, and see, folks, you can see and listen to Joe coming up here at Cats Rising Star in Reno. So you can take, Joe's going to bring a special brand of optimism to the club. I understand that he does his entire act with a harp playing in the background. They'll be releasing butterflies, white doves, and there's a bubble machine.
I'm also standing behind bulletproof glass.
it's a very politically correct show. And afterwards, a lot of guys sell merchandise. Joe gives kisses, and he pays you a dollar just to kiss you.
You know what I actually do after my show? Huh. You're going to laugh. I lost a good friend of mine last year to cancer.
Uh-huh.
And what I do is I have DVDs, and I put them out,
uh-huh.
and they're complimentary. I ask for a donation.
Oh, nice.
You know, whatever you can give. I have a Relay for Life team, and, you know, I sponsor different Relay for Life teams, like, throughout the, like, I just go online, I pick one.
Uh-huh.
Right now I'm doing one at Hofstra University on Long Island, and the DVDs are complimentary. I ask for a donation, and I say, if you don't want to give me a donation, take the DVD. Just give money to cancer somewhere along the line.
Sure.
Like if you're at a fundraiser, give a buck, $2, whatever you want to do.
Sure.
You know, throw $5 into an envelope or something for, like, down the road. Even if you don't want to give it to me, it's not a problem. And that's what I do. I put them out. Because you know what? That's the stuff that makes a difference in people's everyday lives. The politics and shit, talking about politicians and politics is like having an asshole. Everybody has one. You know,
uh-huh.
You heard that expression.
Sure.
You know? So I could talk to him blue in the face, but I honestly believe it's every man for himself, and you respect other people. That's
uh-huh.
it. Just do the right thing. Everybody knows right from wrong. You do the right thing, and you respect other people. I can't blame anybody else for shit that's going on in my life. I can, but what good is that going to do me?
Well, yeah, but ultimately, dude, you got to live with yourself. If you don't, if you can't live with yourself, you're not going to have much of a life, so...
You're 100% right. Like even radical people who do things that are terrible, sometimes they make good points.
Right.
But
and
do you actually carry out something like some sort of fucking hideous act
yeah.
like that? You know?
Yeah.
You might have a good point of view, but what you're doing is fucking is wrong, man. And now you got to pay the price.
Right.
End of story.
I agree.
I hope I'm not pissing anybody off out there.
No, nobody gets pissed off at this. The only reason they should be pissed off is if they miss you at Catch a Rising Star. See?
Some woman got mad at me on Facebook because when they were doing the mosque in New York City, I go, look, you're fucking wasting way too much time about this mosque bullshit. These people are putting a mosque there. You know, the freedoms of religion in our country is going to allow them to do that. I said, what people should do is maybe put some more time into shit like raising money for cancer and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
I said, that's what I like to do because that could change people, change their lives. And the woman called me a fucking terrorist sympathizer. I said, what, are you fucking mind that I said that? And then she went into this whole thing about World War II and her grandfather hung the flag in front of the house. And I said, what is wrong with you? And I said, you're taking this whole thing out of context. Then my friends on Facebook were yelling at her.
Sure.
And then I said, look. Then I wrote, look, I really don't know you. This is what I put down here. Now I'm a comedian, right? I go, I really don't know you, but I'm telling you, I was looking at your Facebook picture.
Uh-huh.
I said, if I were you, I said, I would be more concerned about my cholesterol level than I was about the mosque at 9/11. You fat fuck. I said, now you're blocked. And I blocked her.
Jesus Christ. Oh, man.
And then my wife said, you can't do that. People are going to get mad at you. I said, I'm a comedian, for Christ's sake. Yeah. I'm not, don't take me serious.
Oh, that's
funny.
I
have a point of view, but so does everybody else. I don't give a shit.
That's hilarious. All right, folks, so you can see Joe May 31st to June 5th. Catch a Rising Star. It's Tuesday through Sunday. Joe's at 7:30 every night, except for Fridays and Saturdays. They add a second one at 10 o'clock. You can get your tickets online through Ticketmaster or go to catcharisingstar.com to get more info. Or call the old-fashioned way. Go to the Silver Legacy box office, 775-329-4777. And like I tell you guys, listen to your comedy live. That's the way it's supposed to be done. If you can't make it to see Joe this week, go to a comedy club near you. Thanks for listening.